allow the soothing music and uplifting affirmations to center your heart and mind in an awareness of God's love.
Wake up, my dear sinners. Wake up from your deep rest. Won't you say your prayers? Know that you are blessed. I love you, oh, but Jesus loves you the best. And I hope that you choose your own religion.
Hello, my dearest and my sweetest sinners. Welcome to Choose Your Own Religion. This is not a podcast about nothing. This is a podcast about the Spirit. And this is a podcast about what we grew up with in terms of religion. And it's about forging our own path and choosing our own, because we didn't get to choose it when we were kids. We had no choice, no say in the matter. Well, we're adults now. We get to pick what we want. Sometimes they're good choices. Sometimes they're horrible choices, but we get to make them. We get to fuck them up a bunch, as I have. I've made some good ones, too. I don't need to defend myself right now. I've got Chris Dunham on the show, and Chris is part of the reason why this podcast exists. I've known Chris for a while out here in LA, and we've always found ourselves, it seems, after open mics, just like locking into these intense conversations, and they always kind of ended up in these sort of realms about spirituality or sobriety and drugs and things that were beyond small talk, and that's why he's on the show today, and he's a funny comedian too, and I've always enjoyed watching him perform, and I've loved talking to him, and I'm just excited to have him on, and I'm excited for you guys to hear what we have to say. And I hope you check him out on Twitter. Check him out when he's on the road. Check this show out on Twitter, Facebook. Follow me on iTunes and Stitcher. Subscribe, all that good shit. Leave a review. Buy a hat. I don't have a hat yet. I kind of want a hat. Stickers would be cool, but just like a shitty baseball cap that you can tell was like given out as free swag to try to entice some clients. I want some of those. I want to give everybody a hat that comes on this show. If you know how to make hats, please send me a hat. If you don't know how to make hats, that's fine. Just tune in and love yourself like I love you. And remember, as we say every week, Ja Rule.
So I had three weird, right before you came in, I was like, I had three weird predictions about you. I wanted to know. I want you to tell me. A, I predicted you were a Steelers fan, so I was right on the bat.
Okay.
I knew as soon as your hat was in, boom. Second one was, are you left-handed?
No, I'm right-handed.
No. Damn. For some reason, I'm like, he just seems like a left-handed guy. I don't know. I don't never thought left-handed people had a different personality, but for some reason, I'm like, you kind of seem like you could be a left-hander, well, but apparently not.
Yeah, it's actually weird that, I don't know how if this is even relates. My dad was left-handed, but growing up, he was taught everything right-handed.
Mm.
So he wrote left-handed.
But then he like played sports right-handed.
All right-handed.
I've heard that's common with...
especially, I think, back in the day.
Yeah.
You know, but nowadays, it's like, holy crap. If kid's left-handed and he can throw a little bit...
Oh, yeah.
That's a pitcher.
Exactly, yeah.
If you could throw in the low 90s and you're a left-hander... Like, yeah, you basically and have somewhat control. You pretty much just rode your ticket to at least, like, a really good contract to start out with your professional career.
Yeah, you're at least going to ride the minors for a while.
Yeah, it's like a catcher that can hit.
Well, I'm so disappointed you're not left-handed. I was going to be so, like, proud of my intuition if you were. But I also feel like you grew up Catholic. That was my other prediction. Did you grow up Catholic or
no? But
grew up religious at all, or
it was weird. We didn't grow up with. We became religious when Nana came to town, and meaning that we'd go to church and do all that. But other than that, my family wasn't very religious at all. at least my mom and dad. But I did when I was in high school. Well, then I started going to church when I was 15 by myself.
Mm-hmm. What kind of church did you go to?
Lutheran.
Okay, yeah.
And I even got baptized because I'd never been baptized. Mm. And then I actually chose, when we moved to Erie, Pennsylvania, I chose an all-boys Catholic prep school over public school.
Oh, yeah. Well, they say they're better schools.
Private
schools. Yeah, I was public schooled all the way.
Well, it depends on where you grow up, and it wouldn't have been bad growing up in Erie, Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
The graduation requirements for California, these kids, California, it's weird how we can be so progressive.
Yeah.
And have these very open-minded things, but we have some of the most uneducated dum-dums just walking the street, dude. Like, only 2/3 of the students are going to graduate from high school in LAUSD.
That's mind-blowing. And you would know, as a substitute teacher, you would know better than most people.
Yeah.
You know?
And then, on top of that, the graduation requirements are so incredibly small.
Really?
That if you just have a normal full load for 3 years, you barely have to come to school your senior year.
Wow.
You'll have one, maybe yeah. two classes a day.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like that at the prep school. You
oh,
know?
Yeah?
Oh, my God. I didn't even have an elective.
And you're just like doing homework constantly.
That's all I did. Yeah. It was basketball, homework. I didn't even have a girlfriend my last 2 years of high school. But I thank God for it, man, because I don't think I would have done as well in college, you know? It just kind of prepared me.
Yeah. I went to public school, and it was in North Carolina, and we don't have the best reputation when it comes to public schools because we pay our teachers like nothing out there. But I remember, it was definitely not difficult, I didn't feel like. And I specifically with college, I didn't have the work ethic that I had built up through high school. And so then I got to college, and I'm like, oh, I have to try now? I actually have to do homework? I actually have to put in effort? So with your Catholic school though, I don't know if maybe this is true.
Yeah,
all
we used
of them.
To go to church.
You have to go to church like every day, like mass every
no,
morning.
No, we didn't. We had theology class.
Okay. Yeah.
Which I loved. And then, we would go to church, I would say like once a month, the whole school, you know, but you're dealing with only about 120 kids total for each class.
Mm-hmm.
So what, 480?
Yeah.
You know, 500 kids.
Mm-hmm.
I always liked it, you know. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there are things I'm going to disagree with. You know?
With the church especially, and yeah.
Yeah, just, I mean, I don't know, it's weird. One of the things I disagreed with is that they said that Jesus is God's only son.
Mm-hmm.
And then I go, no, we're all God's sons and daughters.
Right, yeah.
And that I didn't like, you know? Obviously some of the hypocrisy.
Sure.
You know, but you get older and you realize that a lot of people choose, they may say that they're something, but then you really talk to them. And yeah, their overall picture, do you know what I mean by this? But they're doing their own thing within that religion.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? I'd say that's how much my perspective has changed.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, it seems like a lot of people who are, you know, Christian, they're active believers, they all end up carving out your own niche. I don't think that's a bad thing per se. You all kind of want to individualize it. You don't, maybe you take it part and parcel. I went to my first Catholic Mass today.
Did you?
With a friend, yeah. I've done the Protestant thing for a long time, but yeah, a little bit of that, yeah. A little bit of that. Very, they like their patterns, they like their hand signals, I didn't feel comfortable kneeling on the bench. Like, I felt like I wasn't, like it wasn't for me, specifically. Because they already said I couldn't do communion, that's fine. I went in knowing I couldn't do that. But the whole kneeling pad thing? I don't know, it's intimidating.
Yeah, I never took communion while I was going to school.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I thought about actually joining the Catholic Church.
Uh-huh.
You know, I just...
Was it because you weren't ordained Catholic that you couldn't take communion? Was that the position?
I don't know. I just didn't. I can't remember. Mm. Or maybe I didn't feel right doing it.
Yeah.
But there were... Geez, maybe there was only 15 or 20 kids out of that 120 of the seniors, you know, that didn't. Because I think you're also supposed to take... Oh, I don't even remember the specifics. It was so long ago. I feel so old now.
Yeah.
You know, and I loved... It's weird. I just loved that there was a place where it's like, hey, you could... That's supposed to be a symbol of a place where you can go to connect, you know? But at the same time, I looked at it as like, well, if God created everything, then wherever you're standing, sitting, kneeling, whatever's holy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
We don't need a church, something that's raised like a false idol.
Totally. Yeah.
But you could see that with, you know, like in the Protestant Reformation, especially with, I think, what was it, the Quakers in the United States, where their churches basically didn't even look like churches.
Yeah.
You know, it's just it's got walls and we're going to just set up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know if they had a cross up. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Well, it's funny you mention that because the past couple months I've been going with our friend Devin Blake to a Quaker meeting in Pasadena. I've gone a couple times. And it is totally bare bones. It's just pews. I mean, it's literally just a big square room with pews that like so everybody can face each other, and then just like a stand to hold like the announcements and the random materials that they have to give out, and that's it. There's no cross. There's no symbology. There's like an empty like a fireplace with a mantle, and that's pretty much all that's going on there. And I go back and forth with like the, because I totally get what you say, that everywhere should be, you know, God's place. You know, if you're going to believe in God and you believe that we are all children of God, that God is everywhere, then why designate any specific place to it, you know?
But I think that's also where we're at now in the United States and how people operate. Because now we have the news, you know, we have just the internet, right? All of that. So people don't have a meet. Even bars have changed. Like my dad was, I'll be making my point, but even bars have changed. Mm-hmm. My dad told me that when he was growing up, bars weren't places that you just went to go and drink. They were more called beer gardens. And it was a place where you could go and eat and talk with the rest of the people in your town. So it was a meeting place.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that's what church used to be.
You know?
It was a meeting place for so many people to come together, you know? Because you probably wouldn't just say, oh, bye, as soon as the service was over.
Sure, yeah.
You know?
And yeah.
Especially if you're in L.A., get back in your car. And
Right? Yeah.
So there was probably... it really brought a community together.
Yeah.
You know,
that was certainly my experience as a, well, I mean, it's hard for me to tell exactly because I grew up a preacher's kid. So I had to be at church well before and after most people, but there were a solid group of people. Yeah. Who, you know, cause you'd make a whole half day out of it. You show up for Sunday school, you mingle a little bit between Sunday school and church, you go to church and you stay afterward for like commute or fellowship or whatever. In the fellowship hall, you have snacks, you chit chat. Maybe some of you go out to lunch. Maybe you come back in the evening for, you know, some random event or whatever you have. And yeah, it wasn't meant to necessarily say everywhere else you shouldn't worship God. It's just like, oh, this is like the specific area we have.
Yeah. Think of how many,
you know,
business deals have probably gone outside, not within it, but the outside of a church or a temple.
Oh yeah. You know?
It's a great way. Hey, who's going to be there today?
You know? right.
And you know, we don't have that anymore of Sunday. I mean, imagine living in the United States when I'm not saying it's a better time, because anytime you go back right in time, it's some group having less rights.
sure. Yeah.
Oh, weren't the 20s the best? but it was the whole thing of, oh gosh, I lost my place. Yeah, but Sunday, everything would close in the United States.
Yeah, yeah.
It just shut down.
Right.
Like, imagine, it's like Sunday, nada.
Nothing.
There's nothing.
Yep.
Isn't that...
And they were, for some states, I know in some counties in North Carolina, you still can't buy alcohol on Sundays. And I think it's Sunday mornings now. You still can't buy beer in North Carolina. You can't buy any kind of alcohol.
That's how it was in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
You know? But also, I think it was good because, especially in Pittsburgh, what a bunch of drunks.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
I mean, every part of this great country loves their alcohol, it seems like. But yeah.
Well, too, if you see, like, even with football games.
Mm-hmm.
What time do they still start at on the East Coast?
One. Right. After church.
After church.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's, I just feel bad because we have to wake up, make sure we wake up early mm-hmm. on Sundays.
Yeah.
You know? And then, but we're lucky because that night game is done by like 8:30.
Oh, yeah. No, I wouldn't trade West Coast football times for East Coast. It's, you think, you know, growing up, I used to think the opposite. Like, man, they have to wake up at, they have to watch games at 10. Like, who wants to, but now that's, it's such a blessing to be like, oh, cool. I'm waking up. I get a couple things done and then bam, football.
Because we're not going to church.
Pretty much. Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. It's, and so, yeah, when is the last time you went to church? I'm curious. Like attended a service or regularly. Was regularly last time high school for you, or did you at all in your adult life?
God, man. The last time, it's weird. The last time I was in a church, because I really wanted to be there, like go to it.
Yeah.
Was with my buddy Adam Dulesky,
mm-hmm.
freshman year of college. And it was he grew up Presbyterian. And my
That's
mom
what
was,
I grew up to. Yeah,
yeah my mom yeah. was Presbyterian. And so weird, too. My Nana's name is on their, like, Wall of Fame type thing.
Oh, yeah?
For being one of the longest members.
That's and, cool.
But we went to downtown Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And we ended up going in. Maybe that's actually... Yeah. And I think we attended one mass together, and it was, like,
mm-hmm.
this whole thing of... college student and binge drinking and waking up sure. early.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. So probably freshman year of college.
Gotcha. Yeah. It had been a while for me still since, I guess, okay. Whenever I go back home, I always go to church because I would feel obligated to, because my, you know, I have my dad preaching there and my mom still really wants me there. But until I started this podcast, I really hadn't gone voluntarily to church, probably since around that time, too, like freshman year of college. But it's interesting now, like...
It's because that's when college, they get all those liberal commie ideas.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you could say that. Yeah. It definitely... they brainwashed me pretty good with their pot and their drinking and all that.
Yeah.
One thing too, we can edit this out. I don't know how comfortable you are talking on publicly about this, but like with, I know years ago we would talk about like our psychedelic experiences. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this is an area you want to go into, but, I was curious if it seemed like we always kind of talked about like, you know, that some may say it's like a stereotypical, like hippy dippy, like psychedelics leading you to spiritual experiences, but I feel like we had deeper experiences with them.
Yeah, it seemed like some people, they just, my experience with a lot of people have, it's weird. I guess there's three camps. You have the people that have bad experiences.
Right.
You have people that are like, yeah, things just kind of moved around.
Yeah, this is fun. It was a party.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then you had the third group where, sure, all the visuals and all that, but then there was something else.
Yeah, yeah.
Where that deeper connection to existence.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the part I connected to, you know? It was just, I absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
You know? And when it's hard. People say that weed's not a drug. You can't get addicted. Yes, you can. I have friends that are going to MA meetings.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I was definitely addicted to weed for stretches of my life. No question about it.
Yeah. It doesn't have the physical addictive qualities that alcohol does.
No, but it's the same mental kind of reward system that it get addicted to. Yeah.
But mushrooms is a very different thing because it's the one drug, if you want to call it that, that you end up having. You can have a positive experience. And somebody said, what was it like doing with mushrooms? And I said, it's like having a conversation with God. And then my friend responded, but you don't even believe in God. I went, I do when I'm on mushrooms. And, but it was just something so beautiful. And because for me, it was like it's like there's locks on our brains.
Yeah.
And it just comes, it's like, and just, boom.
Totally.
And you're in your consciousness.
Yeah.
You know? And it seems like all of the stuff that really doesn't matter just seems to fade away, at least in my experience. And I became this little, it's like it tapped into that philosophical spiritual side. And for that, I'm just eternally grateful. And I never want to do them again.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. That's why I go, it's probably sounds like a joke somebody's done, but you know, you never see a guy going, hi, Chris, mushroom addict.
right.
That would never happen.
Yeah.
But I think that it can't be discounted. And one of the cool things is, you know, Cary Grant, years when he got older, he couldn't come out and publicly say it then. He said that his use of psychedelics cured his alcoholism. And you can research it. It's on the internet. He thinks it's the greatest thing ever.
Well, you know, the founder of AA, Bill, whatever his last name, Bill W, you know, he was a big LSD fan and proponent. He actually believed that it should be incorporated too on his deathbed. He made some remarks about how he wished it would be, because it does, you know, this is something that Sam Harris talked about in his book. Whatever level of spiritual experiences we have, and I certainly had them on psychedelics, at the very least, the minimal thing it has this effect on you, it makes it undeniable that our consciousness is malleable and is flimsy and is open to being changed, and that you can experience things outside of your default way of thinking.
Default setting.
Right.
Just because you have an iPhone doesn't mean you can't jailbreak it.
Right. And it made me, I think, you know, it didn't necessarily directly lead to me breaking any addictions, but I think probably in the long run it did, just with the realization that, like, oh, like, what things I intake in my body or ways I live my life have a direct effect on my experience in this world, and maybe quitting certain things is going to, like, you don't need alcohol. You don't need
weed. Well, alcohol is the fact that alcohol is actually considered by doctors to be one of the worst drugs out there.
Yeah, yeah.
The worst drugs. And I remember that after doing mushrooms. I remember the first time I drank again. And I went, why am I doing this?
Yeah.
This is a dum-dum drug.
Yeah, man. I remember one of the coolest... I had this crazy, I don't know if I ever told you about it. I'm not going to get into the entire story here, but when, like, kind of my craziest mushroom trip, I had this long cab ride back to North Hollywood from Malibu. And this, the guy that was my cab driver, we got into talking about psychedelics. I just told him I had just, kind of done them. I had to sort of get into it, and he was kind of this ex-hippie guy, right? And he was completely straight edge, like, kind of reformed. But he was like, yeah, if there was one drug I would do again, it would be mushrooms. He's like, booze and weed, they're not going to do anything good for you, you know? And he just kind of said it with, like, kind of a resignation. Like when I knew it wasn't like he wasn't trying to like justify anything to me or like prove me wrong or right. He's just like, I hope you listen to this. He's like, you know, it's like I've done the hedonistic thing and
it's empty.
It's empty. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so weird that kind of Jim Morrison, like taking everything to the edge, hedonistic mm-hmm. lifestyle is it's completely empty and meaningless.
Yeah.
And there's something about all of us that wants meaning,
mm-hmm.
you know? And the weird thing is like, in my early 30s, like when I turned 30, I became super depressed, which is, it's easy for me to get into a depressed mode.
Yeah.
About the world, existence, and all that. And I started coming to these realizations, and I just kept on. I got to this point in my thinking where I went, life is completely meaningless.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And then there was another part of me that says it, but you can give it meaning.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And. But still, there's that part of me that wants an outside meaning because I really love the difference between right and wrong.
Sure, yeah.
And I want people to have standards.
Yeah.
So it's almost like, you know, how I want to relate this to liberals and Democrats, but liberals, don't judge. It's everybody's, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, conservatives are like, there's right and wrong.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, it's like, you guys are so extreme, you're just off.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And you're like, your ideologies don't work in the real world.
Yeah, because they're too broad. They're too single stroke. I think for me, the middle ground is something maybe called discernment or something. There is a judgment, but more in like, not in the sense of I'm not judging people. It's just like, judging actions, like, is this going to be a useful thing in the long run?
How does this benefit?
Yeah.
You know, you know, the world and, you know, is this people just, I mean, I know this isn't spiritual. I don't know. I was thinking about this today is like, you know, it's very easy for us to, the new pejorative term now is social justice warrior.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very easy to, be dismissive of those people is just complaining because they're not successful in life, you know. But then I really thought about that, like, okay, the fact is there's always going to be people. I wish there was an ideology where everybody could feel included, because I don't want anybody to feel on the outside. Being on the outside sucks.
Yeah,
you know. And but to be on the inside, you know, and be inclusive, sometimes we have to suspend rational thought and judgment just to feel good. And I hate that.
Yeah.
So it's like,
man.
What do I choose, you know?
I relate so much to that, yeah.
It's, you know, it's like to feel good, you have to, there's got to be denying reality, you know?
Yeah, it's like there's that old tribal kind of genetics and DNA we have where we all grew up, we all, you know, kind of evolved in these groups of probably, 150 people or so is what people seem to think based on how many relationships we can hold. But psychologists say is about 150 to 200 real relationships is the max we can maintain. And so maybe that's the size of our tribes back in the day. And so, yeah, there's always an out-group when you're a tribe. You have to protect your tribe. And yet, now that we're, you know, thank God we have evolved in our consciousness and our overall collective thinking and realizations to be like, oh, no, we are all kind of, we're all equal. All human beings have basic human rights and are basically equal. And so, yeah, I'm always yearning. I hate any kind of exclusionary thinking or any kind of, that's what any kind of judgment feels like to me.
It's very tough, man.
Yeah.
Because especially being comics.
Yeah.
You know, that's, comedy is judgment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, there's no, you know, so it's that very fine balance, you know, because you don't want to be that person that's going around. I've seen it. People that are just unhappy all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's because they're literally judging everything and nothing is good enough.
Yeah.
You know, or whatever. And it's like, whatever happened to just us being kids?
I know. That was me for a long stretch, that exact thinking. You don't realize it as Same you're way. In it, you know?
Yep.
Or even if you realize it, then you just judge yourself for being judgmental. And then, like, as part of the whole cycle, at least for me, it was. And it made doing stand-up very tough in that regard. Because anytime I'd do a joke, or I would write a joke, I'd be like, well, this isn't really fair. You know, or be like, I can see the other side of the point too, you know, or I don't want to make these people feel bad. But I guess there is something to suspend with that. I think the best comics, because as weird as that, I think we both still love comedy. We both appreciate great comedy. We don't feel like great comics are all assholes per se. And yet, you know, when you think of somebody like Brian Regan, you know, there's mild judgments in there. I guess the difference
but
is
but he's judging things that people don't have a big emotional attachment to.
Yeah.
Or their life invested in that idea.
Right. And there's, you know, I think they're at bottom line, too. A lot of times there's just a sense of love. That maybe with him specifically, but just in general, like, you just sense a self-love, a love of humanity. There's, like, you can tease people if you love them. You know, it's like people, I remember, it's not like growing up in church, we never made fun of each other. We never teased each other. But there was such an underlying trust and, like, bond there that we could tease about the superficial things, but no, we're not judging you at your core.
Yeah, somebody actually said about Brian Regan, it was a famous comic, I forgot who it was, is they don't understand when Brian Regan came up with his refrigerator bit, mm-hmm. he probably turned to someone and said, who the fuck? Like... Is this guy trying to sell me a refrigerator? Who? And then probably went off on an ex, you know, tirade, right? Uh-huh. Or even just thinking about it in his head, going, this is crazy. But by the time it comes out with all the variations, you know, it's, oh, this guy's trying to sell me a refrigerator. How do they even do that? This one keeps your food cold.
Yeah.
You know?
Kind of like the alchemy of his, you know, not to, I don't know exactly what his writing process is, but maybe there is some alchemy going on from that original judgment, that original maybe darker, like, that separateness kind of feeling, like labeling the refrigerator guy as an idiot or whatever, or an asshole, or a manipulative person. But then through a kind of personal alchemy of comedy, you can make it a fun, lighter thing. And then you, at the end of the day, you're like, he's just trying to sell me a fridge.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. And that's the funny thing is this guy actually has to sell fridges for a living.
Right, right. It's not a man to be mad at, you know?
Yeah, you know? It's like when people complain about servers and restaurants, you mm-hmm. know, like comics. And it's weird. I don't know if you've ever worked in the food service industry.
But
95% of the time when there's a problem and you're at a table, has nothing to do with the server.
Nothing to do. Yeah.
And, but it's weird, man. It's like, I've seen how my sensitivity has changed with stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
There's a joke that, and I think it's a better joke now, but that I changed because of that sensitivity of where instead of saying, hey, X group should do this, mm-hmm. it became, thank God X group has never done this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think that if at that point I've done everything in my power to communicate the same idea, and if you're still offended,
right,
or whatever, literally, it's just you.
Yeah. Like, yeah, and that's when you know, but you, because you've done the work to be like, I know my intentions, I know where my heart is, I know I'm really not trying to, like, label this group as all this way or whatever, you know, or I don't know. It's interesting too, because I think in your whole approach, just watching you over the years, you've always struck me as a more unselfish performer than I am, in the sense that you are very concerned, it seems like, with actually making people laugh, maybe more than any kind of personal expression. I mean, I'm not to discount any kind of personal expression you do have, but it seems like you are there to make sure people are laughing and having a good time, like, every time you go up, you know?
I'm trying to think, like, I mean, it depends where I'm at. Someone said to me, the only thing that you need to work on is pushing the boundaries, you know, and really saying how you feel about stuff. And I'm like, well, I do, you know, but if I, it's like, if I feel like sometimes I do pull back on things. Like I'd rather make, when it comes to dating, I'd rather make fun of myself than women, you know? Because it's like, I remember I was dating this one girl and I was like, man, I'm the one with the problem.
Right.
I'm dating her. What the hell is going on in here?
Yeah.
You know? Or I'm the one that's causing relationships to fail.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. The relationship didn't fail because of her. I was the one that walked away.
Yeah.
Because my own commitment issues. So it's like finding that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think as far as personal expression goes, I find now that talking more about my own life, because there is that sensitivity, man. I don't want people to think I'm just talking out of my ass, you know? And so I kind of like hiding all of the stuff within a story about something or whatever, and let people draw their own conclusions.
Yeah.
I guess I kind of like the movie. Do you remember the movie Traffic? Steven Soderbergh?
I don't know if I ever saw it, but that's the one that won a lot of Oscars.
Yeah,
and stuff,
the reason why it was so awesome is because he was shown so many different sides, but he wasn't pronouncing judgment on it. He was just going, this is the reality of the situation.
Kind of like The Wire, or like, you know, did you ever watch The Wire?
First season, that's it.
Okay, yeah, well, that was kind of my impression of it, too. It's, there's good and bad on every side of a given story, you know. It's not, wasn't all... The drug dealers had their reasons for doing that. There's good and bad drug dealers with better and worse intentions and motives. The same for the police, you know. Yeah. I don't know if that's how Traffic was, having never seen it.
But. Yeah, just it was great. Yeah, just like you walk away, you make up your own mind. Mm-hmm. You know, and then it's weird too. When I first started out as a comic, man, I was so political.
Yeah.
It's changed so much. The comic that I am now, it looks nothing like the comic I was when I started.
Yeah.
I just talked about how we're all being controlled, you know, and we're a bunch of slaves to our debt, you know. The Federal Reserve is fake and actually owned by private bank. All of that stuff. And... it just, I was like, and they just, their money isn't real. When they need more, they just make it, you know? So it was, in that respect, I've changed. I was very much a social, almost, man, like a social justice warrior, you know?
But more of like the, in the Occupy, like type of Occupy Wall Street sort of vein, right?
Yeah, not the whiny, you know? Yeah. Like the, it's like still one of my favorite jokes since from my first year of doing stand up is saying, like, man, we're crazy. We put Sacagawea on our dollar coins. What's next? Germans using Anne Frank? She's great at hide and seek, no?
Oh, man.
I love that joke, and people will get offended, and I go, dude.
You're not making fun of Sacagawea.
I'm poking fun at the fact that a country is literally putting somebody on. You know, the thing that those people would not want to be on.
Right. As a, some kind of, you know, attempt to reconcile, I guess.
But that's the problem,
right,
too.
Right, exactly.
You get older,
You
get older and you realize, dude, that actually was kind of nice.
Right.
Because there's
at least it was a token of something.
Because there's nothing to make up for it. And it's also past generations.
Right.
You know, it's like... you know,
me and you can't do anything about what happened before, but so
at all.
Maybe this is the lame, maybe it's kind of lame that we did do it this way,
could you imagine being blamed for something that your great grandfather did?
Yeah.
You're like, I never even met the guy.
Right. Yeah. It's, and yet, so it's like, whatever we do is going to feel inadequate.
Yes.
You know?
And, but you know, I think the United States, man, we're really trying. Yeah. We're really trying. Yeah. And it's a slow process.
And something, too, you were saying about, you know, the... Because you would talk about, I guess, these kind of political, economic, conspiracy theory type stuff, which I think that I can get, you know, go down a documentary wormhole with that kind of stuff, too. I think maybe from when I was a younger comic and, you know, the older I get, the less I want to make any kind of truth claim or, like, it's easier to couch it in a more of, like, well, this is how I felt about it, or this is my... This is the story that happened, or this is the thing, versus like trying to declare like all X or Y, you know,
because
this is how it is.
Dude, it's the same thing of, you know, I don't like to do the all women.
Right.
And I remember back in the day when I first started, the reason why I don't like doing that is because I saw a female comic saying all men.
Yeah.
And I went...
It's like
what the
so
hell?
Not true. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and I mean there are certain things and I still haven't been able to perfect it.
Yeah.
But women that own cats. I swear to God one day I'm going to get there's a certain type of woman that owns a cat versus the type of woman that owns a dog. Mm-hmm. It's just a fact.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know? And especially but I think it might be harder for people to relate that don't live in big cities.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, and I think in general, people, this is like the fact of being a white man now, I don't think people are really interested in hearing our opinions on a lot of that stuff anymore. They feel like they've already, I feel like that people are just not, they're like, okay, you've had your take, you know.
Which is one of the most racist, sexist things to negate you.
Yeah, no, it totally is, but at the same time, I'm like, eh, yeah.
But you can get away with it by telling your own story.
Right, right. And you can, you know, and maybe it is more of a more accurate version to be like, well, this is how this woman was versus trying to make a generalizing statement, which, you know, I think I've definitely have tended to before, and I've definitely been guilty of that. I mean, I've
everyone on the planet has made generalizations.
No, I'm saying, but like...
But on stage.
On stage specifically, yeah. I mean, some people know... have heard me do some misogynistic material before, you know, that's part of the working it out process. I think that was what's like a weird part of comedy for me. And like, it's just like looking back, like part of the process of coming up with a good bit or making a bit better is like having to take maybe raw opinion or raw experience and then refine it over time. And so then like the first few times you say it, you might just like be saying it really wrong or in a stupid way.
Yes.
You know?
But the thing is, now, it's weird because it's weird that the, especially in comedy, maybe you've seen it, where comics are policing other comics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And especially at like an open mic level.
Right, yeah.
Where it's like, yo, some of my best jokes went through 15 rewrites before it got to where it is.
Mm-hmm.
And if you looked at them side by side, you'd be like, oh, dude, only the subject matter.
Yeah.
So you're judging something on, or like, you know, saying that all X, blah, 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 you're judging it. It's like open mic stuff.
Yeah. And conversely for me, sometimes the best material, my problem was that like maybe like the best material would come out like musical. The first time I heard it, like thought of it, bam, that was the bit. It got maybe only slightly better than that. And so that would be my kind of, it's like, I need to kind of say the thought or whatever as I originally thought it, the musical kind of way I thought it. And so then I would maybe say something that wasn't as well thought out and have like, wasn't giving a fair shake to all sides. And then you say something misogynistic out of that and you're like, but you're like, you're trying to do it in the spirit of having a good joke. Like you're just saying like, well, this is where my other good stuff came from, the same place. I don't know whether it's funny yet until I tell it in front of an audience. You're like, well, I guess it's not funny. And so, I don't know. It's a different...
And then, in the end, dude, think about it. Brian Regan, I wonder if there's been a refrigerator salesman or the wife of a refrigerator salesman that's been sitting in the audience or heard that joke and went, oh, my God. So, no matter what, you're going to... somebody will take offense to it because... And... You know, because jokes, can you imagine a theater of 500 or 600 people laughing about your job? yeah. how stupid it is.
Yeah.
Don't you think you'd feel like crap?
Mm-hmm.
It's, but in the end, dude, you're going to offend everybody. Right. Somewhere along the line. And so if everybody's getting offended, then it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's where I think, again, it kind of circles back to like that idea of if you really have love in your heart and you have love behind what you're saying, I think you'll probably be okay.
Yeah, because people can, more is communicated by how you're saying something.
Yeah.
Versus the actual content.
Right.
And it's, yeah. It's a very simple thing to mm-hmm. understand when, and I think that, you know, with stand, what was I going to say? God, I forgot.
It was, I guess, one thing, I don't know, it's like, maybe that sometimes can be the pure difference between like teasing women for something, an observation, versus something that comes off as truly misogynistic, is whether you're feeling love and like kind of an abundance mentality about it. Like you're not feeling bitter versus like a depressed person or
yeah.
a bitter, you know, you're not having a good stretch of like luck with women at that point in time. And then people can feel that kind of loserness off of you. And then that's when it comes off as misogynistic, you know, versus if you're just having fun with it, then it's like almost like I guarantee you there's like you just say the exact same bit, but when there's a different way.
You know what? My
people
body,
love it.
Yeah. And it's all about, you know, how you say it, not what you say. And
yeah.
One of the things that really gave light to one of my jokes was when I added it was about an honest marriage proposal.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just the guy on one knee. But then someone said, dude, you should have the woman say something back. And I was like, that sounds great.
Mm-hmm.
And so it sounds, so the guy goes first, well, women get to have the last laugh,
mm-hmm.
you know? And because if women aren't laughing, your show's dead in the water.
Right, yeah.
There's some comics that realize that so much that their entire act, if you really think about it, is playing just to women.
Yeah.
Because the guys will show up.
Yeah,
because they, you know, they want to be there around all the women.
Mm-hmm.
But
it's true. Yeah,
I think if you're being dishonest with yourself and by saying something that you don't actually believe, I don't know how anyone could live with that.
Yeah,
that to me, when you're just pandering, mm-hmm. there's a difference between learning how to communicate something
yep.
versus pandering.
Right. Totally. Yeah. Yeah. Because there's
that's what you honestly believe. Like say if I say something that's extremely misogynistic, right,
mm-hmm.
and I believe that,
mm-hmm.
and everyone is laughing and all that, then okay. But if I say something that's misogynistic because I'm trying to just pander, but I don't actually believe that.
Right.
Oh, you're working for the devil, bro. You're doing the no devil's handiwork.
Yeah. It's, I can't remember who said it, but they said, like, you know, the difference between expression and communication is taking the audience into account, or taking the other side's point of view into account, you know? And so I think that's where a lot of skillful, good, and just, you know, funny stand-up comes from, just being like, how is, you know, and that's where, like, the selfishness, and you think there's, like, a purity to it, I think, as an artist, you're, like, your pure expression, you're, I don't want to pander. I don't want to change anything of like the core essence of it. But then you're not communicating when you do that because you're just being like, yeah. my way is the right way. You're
yeah,
like,
well,
you know?
You're doing it already, right? The communication part, because you're going to get laughs.
Right.
The whole goal in the end is to get laughs. If you're not getting laughs, it is not stand-up comedy. It's stand-up
It's something else, yeah. Right.
You know?
Right.
It's crappy spoken word poetry.
Right. A spoken word poetry with no rhyme.
You know what's amazing, actually, about yeah. spoken word poetry? They say all the stuff that is the engine inside the joke.
Mm.
So because they don't care about laughs, they don't have to use the same kind of... like if it's a car, they don't have to use the same kind of molding
yeah.
and stuff like that, you know? And... they can just say the truth.
Kind of pure essence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in the joke, that has to be hidden. The idea has to be hidden. Mm-hmm. And the idea, we hide it behind our emotions and the imageries that we use in the opinion.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? Because people have to see what we're talking about.
Sure. It's kind of reminded me, too, of like... I've seen a couple of his sermons over the past few months, and I saw there's one guy today, right? I could tell sitting in the audience that he was bombing in the terms of like what he was saying was just so not connecting with people, but like he has no idea, you know. But then like that's one kind of cool benefit of even when you're at least when you're bombing in stand up, you're getting direct feedback. Like, people are not receptive.
Yeah,
to one way or the other of this. I guess it's the same way with spoken word poetry. The good is that you can maybe keep it purer, mm-hmm. but then
people going.
But then some people are kind of like, not so sure about that.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no way.
That riff.
No, that's a good point. There's no way to tell if what you're doing is really that good.
Yeah.
You know, I heard that someone was telling me that Bon Jovi, their first album, what they did is they actually went to a bar and just started playing all the songs that they wanted to put on the album. And one of the songs they didn't want to put on the album, but it was getting one of the biggest responses. So they put that.
Oh, that's cool. Was it like Living on a Prayer or something?
I think it was something like that.
That's like one of their massive ones.
Yep.
That's so interesting.
And that kind of makes sense when you think about why artists tend to fall off mm-hmm. later on. Is because their first albums are always played in front of people that aren't really their fans. So they get that direct, oh man, this is awesome, you know? And then they have their first album that drops. That's their... People don't understand... Your first album is your greatest hits.
Right.
That's for the anywhere previous from 5 to 10 years that your band has been together. It's like people think of like the Beatles, like, oh my God, the Beatles, they were only 22 and 23. I'm like, they had been together since they were 14.
Yeah.
Like nearly a decade.
And as like I think Malcolm Gladwell talked about in his Outliers book, like they had been playing in like a German underground Hamburg. Clubs for, yeah.
For, was it Hamburg?
I think it was Hamburg. Some German city. They've been playing, night after night after night together.
They knew each other inside and out.
Yeah.
And their songs, their sound, everything was just honed.
Yeah.
And it's, that actually, that you mentioned that Gladwell book, mm-hmm. I read like a quick little review and I was like, okay, this is all just common sense. I love how so much, let me guess, hard work, it comes down to working hard
mm-hmm.
and,
Good circumstances,
and luck.
Yeah.
So you could even say like, practice, connections, luck.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was watching this thing with it was shot 10 years ago. J.J. Abrams, Mark Hamill, and Kevin Smith all in a roundtable discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And J.J. was saying that J.J. is so talented. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, super talented. I'm so happy he's directing Star Wars.
Yeah, me
directed.
Too.
But he said he was in college. He was scared about graduating because he had zero prospects.
Mm-hmm.
And he was back in Los Angeles on a break or something. And the girl that he knew, whose father was some like bigwig,
mm-hmm.
He said to her, "Yeah, we should write something together." Well, they wrote something together, gave it to her dad. That immediately gets bought.
Mm-hmm.
And then they ask. Okay, well, what else do you have, JJ? And that's when he sat down and wrote the movie regarding Henry.
Mm.
And it's so great because that, I look at it as like connections, luck, being at that moment, passing that girl. Because he could have been one of those screenwriters that I'm just trying to get a TV staff writing gig.
Yeah.
You know? And regarding Henry was a good movie. So you see all of those combined. But... The only thing we have control over is real control over is the work.
Right. You can show up every day. You know, it's I saw in some article, some Facebook article a long time ago about baseball. It's like this idea that it takes no talent to hustle. You know, it's something that you can control. You can't control how talented you are. You can't control your specific skill set. But yeah, you can show up to work, you know, however that manifests itself. You know, maybe, you know, for me, I've taken some time away from stand-up to start exploring other stuff, and I'm having a lot of fun doing it, like improv and screenwriting and stuff like that. But you still got to show up at the end of the day, you know?
Yeah, it's the same thing of you can't determine anything that really happens in your life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can put feelers out there.
Yeah.
show up. And I was thinking about this is like, in relation to spiritual religion or whatever, is every day when I wake up, the first thing I do is clear my brain. I try to clear it, and it's almost my form of meditation, because I realize the one thing, I can't control any of thoughts or emotions going through, but I can set, you know, and try to practice from the start being positive as soon as the morning starts.
Yeah.
You know, and getting that set in motion, you know, and man, it helps out my day. I don't know if you have one of these brains, but literally 99% of the time when I wake up in the morning, it's a negative thought.
A lot of times it is, yeah. Or it's a rush to immediately fill it with a void of the internet or something, you know?
And yeah, and I'm just, I don't like that.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, I think, so do you formally meditate? Is that how you clear your mind? Or
I haven't really gotten into meditation.
Yeah, you are ripe for meditation, my friend.
Yeah, I think a good 5 minutes, maybe, 5-10 minutes, yeah. Start out, something yeah. small.
Because it's like, you know, I think you're totally right that we can't control our thoughts. I've had an on-off relationship with meditation over the years. I do in one form or another, I get some kind of meditation in every day now. It's usually only 5 or 10 minutes. But, you know, we truly can't control our thoughts or that kind of flood. But meditation sort of, in any kind of, I don't know, prayer does this a lot for some people. Various things do it for different people. But, you know, we can control our relationship to our thoughts. You know, we can realize that our thoughts are not us. They're things that we have, and they're fleeting, and they're not.
Could you imagine real. If our fears were part of us?
Yeah.
Holy God. I don't know about you. Do you deal with fear?
Oh, all the time. Constantly, man.
Dude, my anxiety. Have you ever had panic attacks?
Not formally ascribed as such. No.
Anxiety attacks.
It's hard to say.
I like lower level.
Not to the level where it like physically has manifested. Like when I think of anxiety or panic attacks, I think of like you lose control of your body type deal.
See, I think of panic attacks like that.
Okay.
You know, and then anxiety attacks like right below where you just get wrapped up in your thoughts and your emotions.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah, I think
it's like
so.
The world feels like it's closing down.
I think that's when I've like quit stuff before, like not in both good and bad things. I've quit. Sometimes I've bailed on stuff, on good situations. I've self-sabotaged through that because I feel all this anxiety and be like, I gotta escape, you know? But then sometimes that same instinct can be like, I cannot drink anymore. You know?
Yeah. Actually, you say the not drink. Over 9 months ago, I decided, especially, it's an easy thing to do.
Yeah.
Being in my mid-30s is, dude, I'm done with alcohol.
Totally done.
And it's so weird because I never realized, like, how much, because I was still drinking like a college student on the weekends.
Mm-hmm.
Well, dude, your 20s, you recover. Your 30s, not only is it like the physical, like, oh, you're feeling tired and groggy and all that.
Yeah.
It starts affecting you mentally.
Oh, totally, man.
And I was just, I was done.
And I am not totally done in the sense that I've now gotten to a place where I feel like I can have one or two, whatever. But, you know, just recently I had a weekend where I had more than two, which had been a while since that. And yeah, it gets me on a bad start mentally for like the rest of, like the next day is done, you know?
Yeah.
And then the rest of that week is sort of the tone is playing catch up. To whereas, like, whenever I was completely sober and I, you know, and still am, like, mostly sober, but, like, you just keep that momentum going in that.
Yeah, like, I don't want to.
You don't want to restart all that
again.
Yeah, you know?
I don't want to do the, like, I realize one of the things I hate in life is the feeling of spinning my tires.
Yeah.
And I'm not
progress.
I just love moving forward.
Yeah.
Whether it's understanding my brain and how to, you know, or what's going on in the world, my relationship to the world.
Yeah.
You know, and the world's relationship to me. Where's my place?
Yeah.
And just moving along. And from that, in these last 9 months, it's amazing. My close friends that have known me for a long time, they say I'm more like the person that they met at 19. Than the person that they've known in the last 3 to 4 years.
How interesting.
And they said it's all my optimism.
Yeah.
And because life becomes, when I cut that out, because it's a fucking poison, man. You know, it's like,
yeah.
And, but it's like life ends up becoming a John Hughes movie to me. That's the best way I could describe it. It's like, yeah, Star Wars, you know, and like, blah, blah, blah. And it's just, yeah, if I'm drinking, I feel like, it's some sad sack, you know, woe is me.
Yeah.
Life is so difficult.
Right.
Oh, it's like, oh my God. When you,
yeah.
That's where, like, oh, I, like the, it's weird. It's like, I think I felt more in that mindset of like, that I was somehow, I didn't realize that I had made myself into a victim. Do you know? Like, I was the one that was causing my own stagnation.
Sure.
Because I wasn't doing cool things during the weekend. You know? It was like, well, I guess I'll just sit here, maybe hit a stage.
Yeah.
And then just sit there and watch movies. Like, no. Yesterday, what did I do? I had a table read at the UCB Sunset in their inner sanctum.
For the pilot
that I co-wrote. Today, I had a business meeting. And now I'm doing the podcast with you.
Yeah.
Like, dude. Those first two projects never even would have happened because I had to spend all my time during the weekends working on that stuff.
Yeah.
And reaching out to people. And then the podcast, I'd have been like, oh, I don't know if I can do it, man.
Yeah.
Because Sunday would have rolled around and all that stuff, like doing laundry.
It built up.
Yeah.
Yeah. I totally identify with all that. And a couple of things you just said just really, really touch something for me. I think growth and any kind of growth seems to be sort of maybe a key to happiness or a good way to be like to sort of, you know, we can't really guarantee happiness, but if you feel like you're growing, you're making progress, you're probably going to feel happy, whether it's and your progress in the ways that you want to be making progress, you know, wherever your attention is, your energy is pointed to. I don't even have to be at the end goal yet, but if I feel like I'm concretely making steps, you know, and that feeling of growth and progress, that's sort of maybe what my, that's one of the things that I think of as God or spirituality is like, this is why we all seem to want to grow. We all want to do better than what we currently have. We're, that the status quo and being too comfortable with it, just that stagnation just feels awful.
Awful.
And, you know, and there is a difference, you know, there's also the problem with wanting growth at too high a cost is the anxiety that can come in. And, you know, it's like kind of like the Buddhist or Zen or however you want to say it way, maybe more Eastern thinking is trying to be, to accept your current state and not be too stressed out over it. However, there is a, that can lead to stagnation if you're not careful. And, I don't know. There that sense of personal growth. That's what it means on a personal level, like a individual level. To me, is like individual kind of growth. But then, what I think alcohol does, or a lot of drugs in general do. Weed sometimes it can go either way. Weed sometimes can make you think of they both can make you selfish in the sense that they can both limit your worldview to just you and your experience. And I think that's what alcohol can do. It's just, it starts shutting you off to what other people are experiencing.
How about this? Other messages.
Yeah.
Good messages.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And good times.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And you start getting in that instant gratification mode. Like,
oh, I call it the instant gratification hole. Dude, I lost 30 pounds.
That's amazing.
In the last 9 months. And it, I mean, granted, the last 2.5 months I've been at the gym, back doing yoga. Oh, mm-hmm. I love it.
Yeah.
But it's that hole that can only be filled with, all the instant gratifiers.
Yeah.
That immediately, for some reason, why, I don't understand, all the stuff for instant gratification will always make you feel like crap afterwards.
Yeah. It's trading happiness for later, for now. And like, we know it.
Yeah.
For me, that at least it, being aware of that helps me do it less. I mean, we all have some degree of wanting to give in to that instant gratification, but it's a constant. It's a trap, you know. It's one thing they talk about it in. I don't know how familiar you are with like Hinduism or
a little bit. Yeah,
I think they call it there's like three basic modes. There's like the sattvic kind of way of saying, like, the sattva state is like the higher state, like you are, you have everything properly kind of aligned, whereas like the rajastic state is sort of like you're more in that instant gratification mode, and you're never going to be like, you think you're trading, you're, it tastes like nectar now but tastes like poison later, whereas the sattvic state maybe tastes like poison now but will be like nectar later, and that's like the delaying happiness type of thing. You know, it's like that that marshmallow study. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
It's like there's a classic study. Oh,
between waiting to get X number of marshmallows, right, and you can have these marshmallows now.
Yeah, and that seems to be a big indicator of happiness for a lot of people. Or for, you know, it's like your ability to delay gratification.
Yeah, that's what I love about yoga.
Mm-hmm.
Is because when that hour and a half is done and you're just laying there, man, this was so worth it.
Right, right.
And it's weird, but it's like, but somebody said this, and I kind of believe it, is that the same chemicals are released, the oxytocin, mm-hmm, that's released through an orgasm,
mm-hmm,
is released from doing yoga.
Mm-hmm.
That's why people are just like, you know?
Yeah,
and
I believe it.
So it's like, yeah, you can either go to X videos, you know,
or sure,
go hit a yoga class.
Right, and then next video is you'll feel, and as soon as you're done, you're gonna be like, what the fuck did I do?
Yeah, and yeah, you did nothing to actually make yourself more flexible. Because it's weird how much the body influences our emotions and our thoughts.
Totally.
More than we give it credit for. Like, there's some things that you'll hear people, you gotta work from the inside out.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, yeah. Also, a lot of time, it's like, you got to work from the outside to get to the inside.
Right.
It's a symbiotic, like,
you got to get the behaviors right maybe before you feel like doing them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So getting back into the gym hurts at first, right? Mm-hmm. Sore. You know, there's that part of your brain that's just like, I don't want to.
Right.
And you just go, screw you, baby.
Mm-hmm.
And you just go. And then that becomes your new normal.
Mm-hmm.
And then next thing you know, instead of not wanting to go, if you have to miss a day, you feel bad.
Yep.
Totally. Then, but you can't stop doing that stuff. You know? Like, I hope I never stop doing yoga. I absolutely love it. It clears my brain.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's like a reset button.
Yeah. It's a lot of that stuff is just like, I used to think of it. This past particular week has not been a great week for me working out wise. But to me, it's not even a negotiable in the long run. It's just like, it's just kind of, like, at the very least, I should be doing maintenance work. Ideally, I should be like trying to get stronger in some way, or maybe lose weight, or trying to get more flexible, whether if I'm doing yoga. But like, it's just the baseline. Like, I just know if I don't do those things, if I don't work out, if I don't exercise, I turn into a lunatic at like day three. I'm like the worst person to be around. And I'm just like, everything is like, I just start seeing the world so much grayer and darker. And I'm like, oh, like, I think like, what am I doing wrong with my life? And I'm like, oh, I just need to like go run, you know?
Yeah.
It's that simple.
Yeah. And it's, and also it's, you know, and then over time, especially the flexibility, it's weird. You think about meditation, or it could be self-help. I mean, mm-hmm, I'm at that age. Yeah, I've read more than one self-help book.
I used to,
everything that I made fun of at 25 and that I hated are things that don't bother me, or I like at 35.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. You know, I mean, if Taylor Swift comes on the radio, I don't turn it off. And I go, what's happened? You know? Because back in the day, I would have been like, that ain't music. Led Zeppelin, that's music.
Right.
And I go, no, man, it's all, like, all of it. Just enjoy whatever it is, you know? For me, at least, if I like it.
As maybe Fox Mulder would say, the next files, you've opened yourself up to extreme possibilities, you know? Like, you just let yourself like it, you know?
Yeah, and it's...
It's funny.
Because I remember when I was going through that transition of, like, I can't believe I'm listening to Taylor Swift to... I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
I remember when I would be blasting it, right? Turning it up.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I got to a stoplight, I didn't want anyone to hear that.
Right.
I
immediately turn it down. Yes. Yeah.
And roll up the windows. Gotta let that just the shame.
Gotta let that love shine, my man. to take it back a little bit, to stand up, maybe. Do you see stand up as a spiritual kind of practice for you at all? Does it mean something more now in terms of like your connection to all of human beings, or is it?
Well, stand up has really taught me that patience. I know it sounds weird, but patience is such an underrated thing to have. Patience, to let go of outcome dependency.
Mm, yeah.
Because you're going to be miserable.
Yeah.
It's just, I was thinking about this. Yep. Is like, if everything always met what you wanted the outcome to be, you would be bored.
Yep. That's so funny. I never thought of it that way, but you're right. Yeah.
You would be bored. You'd go, well, why am I going to go play basketball? I'm just going to win by 20.
Right. The excitement is in not knowing what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, so whether it's good or bad, so when it's weird now. I honestly just love doing. Mm. That's when I realized, like, you know when people would say, it's not the destination, but the journey.
Yeah.
And you used to just want to go, you know what, buddy?
Right.
It's true. Yeah, it is true.
Yeah.
And because you got to enjoy the doing of it. Mm-hmm. If you're waiting, like, you know, I don't get upset anymore. Yeah. If it's an open mic, I always do alt shows because that's tried and true material.
Right.
Because I'm one of those people that also I love doing open mics. I don't mind them.
Mm-hmm.
So really work on the material there. As you well know, I've just a specific group of ones that I love.
Yeah.
Because they're better than some of the smaller shows. But I'm doing it to do it. I do it because I love doing that. And so when I get off stage, dude, you wouldn't even have known if I had a good set or a bad set anymore.
Yeah.
Or even if it was mediocre.
You just couldn't tell.
Because I let it go.
That's amazing, yeah.
And then when I listen to audio or video, I don't have the emotional attachment. Either something works or it doesn't work. I actually feel like I'm helping out, which is me, but helping just coach.
Yeah.
You know, and if you become more of that scientist with it and take out the emotional aspect, it makes it easier.
Yeah.
But once again, you're going to be, I know me, I'm going to be miserable if I have from outcome dependent.
Yeah, I could never. I still have not gotten to that point of being able to listen back to sets and like enjoy the process. I've recorded like almost every set I've done, but it's like listening back, all my judgment starts getting in there, and I'm like, oof.
I don't know if this helps.
Yeah.
Video works better for me.
Really?
Yeah. Because it makes me feel like I'm an audience member, and now I feel like I'm just sitting at an open mic or a show watching a comic, and I'm just helping them fix their jokes or clean up, add tags, whatever.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Interesting.
There's that distance. I don't get mad at myself.
Interesting. See, for me, it's been years since I've watched myself on video, but maybe this was just younger comic me. It's like the judgment is turned up to 11 because now I'm like criticizing a million like visual things. I'm like, oh, you look dumb. The way you smiled looks stupid or stuff like that. But maybe, I don't know. I think I'm in a healthier place now. I could maybe do it. But,
and all your little, we all have little, I guess
you could say ticks
or whatever. Like one of the things is holding onto the mic stand,
yeah,
which feels so comfortable, but when you're watching it on video, looks like crap.
Yeah.
You know, or how about this move?
Right, yep.
Been, it looks defensive.
Done that one
and
a lot.
Anxious.
Yep. It just subcommunicates a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's better just bah.
Right.
But I notice, and this is weird, like the comic I am now compared, when I'm starting off, my jokes aren't very physical.
Mm-hmm.
But then over time, when I flesh them out, that's when I have fun. I love acting stuff out. You know, I don't want to say like, oh, this blah, 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 and then just end it.
Yeah.
I want to show you now. I want to play that scene out. I want to play my grandma.
Right.
You know, I want, if I'm going to say, I feel like George Bush lives in my head.
Yeah.
You know, then I want to do my crappy impersonation of George Bush.
Yeah.
Because I want to have fun with it.
Yeah.
You know?
And then in the ironically detached world of LA open mics, that's a bold move to do an act outs. It's not an act out city in my experience.
You don't think so?
Maybe not open mic level.
No, you know what it is? It actually started the whole getting rid of act outs.
Mm-hmm.
That actually started a little bit before I started doing stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
It was because of Dane Cook.
Mm, yeah.
Dane Cook had all act out, but zero
jokes.
It's
act out driven.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just all act out driven.
Yeah.
And which his first album, and that was also, it was well written. His first album,
mm-hmm.
that's great stuff.
Yeah.
Like, and just Burger King, and like right. the yeah, Burger yeah. King joke and all that. It's funny.
Yeah.
You know? But then after a while, the jokes weren't there, and it was all performance driven.
Right. And it's so hard to re-listen to it.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, well, you had, actually, couldn't even listen to it because you had to watch it. Mm-hmm. And then, so it started. And that's when I think, like, especially in the alternative comedy world,
mm-hmm.
they just said no act outs. Like, that's right. what you knew. Like, right when I started, that's how you knew if someone was alternative or a club comic.
Yeah.
You know, is do they do act outs? Do they do act outs? You know, oh, the club comic. And that had a negative yeah. connotation to it.
Yeah. It's just way too, that's just so sad, you know?
Which is, because, and when I started, I was very much more, I've never been a part of the alternative comedy scene, but I always felt when I started that that's where I would fit in better.
Mm-hmm.
But I noticed that when I'm being very, I guess you could say stoic on stage, is that the right description? And it's more joke-based and all that, I don't have as much fun because I'm not being me.
Yeah.
Like, I want to be silly. Like, if you look back at all the times, somebody said this, all the times that you've made a bunch of friends or whoever laugh, that's your real comedic self.
Yeah.
All the other stuff that we've tried on stage is just utter BS.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I think you see some of those guys kind of take off immediately. They understand it. Well, the rest of us for the first 5 or 6 years are just, what am I doing up here?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
those guys are like, okay, I know this is what makes me funny. I'm going to keep doing this.
Yep.
You know?
And it's like, yeah, you're being silly. You're not trying to make truth points. You know, you're not trying to
see,
say,
I like taking yeah. the, I make a truth point, but then go be silly.
Be crazy with it. Yeah.
It's a combination of my mom and my dad. Because my dad growing up, very sarcastic,
mm-hmm.
you know, just a very strong wit. And then my mom is a silly goose. So she would just stand up and act out the little thing. So if you really break it down, that's all. My entire comedy is literally taking both of their sense of humors. I know that's very deductive or reductive.
Yeah.
You know, but taking, fusing them together.
That's cool.
So if you ever see me doing an act out, he's doing his mom.
It's mom stuff.
Yeah.
I guess this is we talked about, I guess, a lot of these kind of concepts. I want to shift into the second half, or not time wise second half, but yeah. You can hold on a sec.
Put in plush carpeting. The person can provide their own rugs.
Yeah, totally. So yeah, I guess now we want to transition to the second part of the show where we try to design a religion for you.
Okay.
You're like, I don't know. It could be totally as silly as we want it to be in the name of silly gooseness. I guess we didn't really get to it though. I don't know if you were to come up with a religion, you know, what would like your kind of sense of God be?
I want everyone to have their own opinion,
mm-hmm.
and no one should be shunned. It's kind of like we're all parts of the puzzle.
Yeah.
And so I guess that's part of the problem with organized religion for me, is the fact that you could be a Christian. Well, some people say, oh, they don't like gays. And then another people could say, oh, we don't mind gays.
Mm.
Where it's like, what part of Christianity are you?
Yeah.
You know, or you have to sacrifice part of your beliefs to feel included, part of the group.
Mm-hmm.
Each person, I hope, would have their own. Because I love hearing that. I guess that's part of I'm feeling like I'm in college again, is I want to hear more about other. I don't care about my own opinions anymore. I love hearing other people's, you know, interpretation of reality.
Yeah.
To me, that's beautiful. It's so unique, especially if somebody can communicate that But my conception of God, I feel comfortable when someone, but this is, once again, using something that's very Western, right? God, mm-hmm. Christianity, whatever. If someone were to say, what does God mean to you? I would say, I'm comfortable using the term God, as long as you're talking about everything that was, is, and will ever be.
Alpha and Omega.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to me, I would identify more with the God of the New, you know, in the New Testament mm-hmm. than the Old Testament. Patience, love, tolerance, forgiveness.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, understanding and open-mindedness.
Yeah.
So I think it's weird. I was having the conversation with somebody, and hopefully I can communicate this too, but they said, well, you know, we should be allowed to have the Ten Commandments up in, you know, our courtrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, no. And they go, why? I go, because it doesn't protect Christianity either. Not only are you putting forth a religion, but that will eventually come back to backfire. Because what you're saying is that one religion is better than the other, and that needs to be put into a courtroom.
Yeah.
Well, if there's anything I know about human beings, well, first of all, how would you feel if you went in and you saw stuff from Islam?
Right, yeah.
You know, or Buddhism or whatever. You'd get, that same person would be upset.
Yeah. It would be weird if the Eightfold Path was outside of every courtroom, you know?
Yeah. So, but the thing also, we don't, by not having a national religion, you actually are protecting all religions. And
right.
Because if people's ideas and how they feel, their beliefs change over time.
Mm-hmm.
So in 50 years, if we had to have a national religion, it could be Islam up there, and then other people are upset.
Right.
You
yeah.
know? So it's better not to have it all. Or somebody said, I still don't feel it's a place for a courtroom, but they said, yeah, well, there should be something from every religion. I go, dude, now you're going way too liberal on me, buddy. could you imagine all of the religions that are out there? And, well, we got to make these people just have none.
Like the Jedi religion, you know?
That would be mine.
Yeah.
Register as a Jedi Knight.
Yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, you're kind of big, I guess. If there is any sense of God, maybe, is what I'm hearing, and I find some truth in this. It is, like, through, like, differences of opinion, like, through hearing lots of different opinions, we can maybe triangulate, you know, what some sort of truth is. You know, it's being open and realizing that your own perspective is not the end-all, be-all, you know.
And that your perspective will change. That's what a belief is.
Right, yeah. It doesn't have to be stagnant and dogma forever and ever, you know?
Yeah, when, you know, that's the thing with science, right? When they come up with a law, it's a law. That doesn't change.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Beliefs have the ability to change, so it's very weird that people will have a belief can change, that's why it's a belief.
Yeah.
And yet people act like it's fucking science. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, no, it's our interpretation of the world.
Yeah.
You know? And, I mean, God, man, dude, we think we're so progressive. Do you understand how people are going to look back upon this time in 100 years?
Mm-hmm.
They're going to look, those close-minded.
You're right. You're right.
Oh, my God.
And,
you know?
In ways we just take completely for granted.
Yeah.
Sometimes I, like, pick up on certain things. You're like, oh, that'll be, people are going to judge us for that, you know?
They won't understand when it finally gets released. That why we had the ability to go electric with our cars, or retrofit cars to at least become electric hybrids, even though there's money involved, they won't understand why money trumped environmentalism.
Yeah,
they will not understand.
I think you're right about that. Yeah,
you know, because they're becoming more connected to the world,
and it's becoming sort of a moral issue. You know,
yeah,
a lot of that stuff. So, yeah, I guess if we had any, I mean, this is, so we have this, I guess a religion where we want you know, lots of differences, an evolution of belief and lots of different opinions. Do we have any, if you were to come up with one, would you have any kind of rules or like codes of behavior? I mean, I know sobriety has done great things for you. It's done great things for me when I've stuck to it. Would you want to be in a community around other people like that, or?
Nah. I like, I'm trying to think, code of ethics.
I mean, like, are we going to like, are we going, Footloose style, or there's no dancing allowed, or,
you know? Nah, I don't have any, like, just, don't harm.
That's the rule.
Yeah. Just, and I've been like that, you know, even when I was little. I was actually, I was the kid that fought the bullies when they were bullying somebody else. So I have a great sense of standing up for injustice, you know? So, yeah, just the harm thing. Because there's no need. There's no need to harm or have, you know, be short-minded. Everyone is so worried about their own survival, you know? And,
it's that fear.
Well, you can't, but you can never go through life not harming.
Yeah.
The act of existence harms something.
Right, you're going to eat up some resources you from are. Someone. Yeah.
It's like, you know, what do they say? So just trying to understand, living a life that's congruent to your values and doesn't try, well, something will always take away from somebody else. No, not all the time. That's, you know, it's kind of like, well, if someone got rich, it's because they screwed people over. It's like, no, they created an app.
Or they created value for other people. You know?
If you
created an app that makes you rich, then that means people are willing to pay for your app for some reason, that you're providing some kind of value for millions of people, enough where they're willing to give you a dollar or two, you know?
Yeah,
you've made that many lives better in some
way.
You
have.
Yeah.
You know, trying to minimize damage.
Yeah.
And no one knows why we're here. We're all going to die.
Yeah.
And death doesn't end all the stuff that makes you, you become something else, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, just don't hold on so tight. Don't take life so seriously. Yeah. But we tend to do that. I mean, God, look at wars.
Yeah.
That's another thing. They're going to look back upon some wars and be like, I can't believe these animals.
They had war at all.
Yeah. You know? What was the point of that? But part of the problem is that we're going to get into... Sorry if I'm going off tangent.
No, you're fine. Yeah.
Is we're going... The wars in the future are going to be... resources, actual resources, not just money and power, but water is going to become a thing, you know, and because we just, that's why the big issue really comes down to overpopulation. Would we be talking about the destruction of the environment if we had half as many people on the planet?
No, yeah, we'd be fine. Like, drill, baby, drill.
Yeah, drill, baby, drill would be, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so our rules are basically, for this religion, don't do any harm, right?
Try to minimize harm.
Minimize harm, right.
Minimize harm, celebrate different viewpoints.
Are you it's okay if you're not at all. Are you any kind of, like, ancient, are you any kind of text guy? Like, do you want to have any kind of central?
Back on.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Do you have any kind of like specific books or texts you would like to be a part of your religion, ancient or modern? You know, I don't know if like you really. The Bible's a pretty pretty choppy document overall.
I think I said it earlier. I think our motto would be the change you want to see in the world.
Right. So that
we would probably look at draw inspiration from the Force. Star Wars.
Yeah.
Because the reason why I like the Force is the Force isn't negative or positive. What people use it for.
Mm-hmm.
And if you really break down the things that Yoda says, He was telling kids, some really deep stuff in 1980.
You're right.
That I was rewatching Empire Strikes Back, and I go, this relates more now than it did when I was a kid.
Totally.
You know?
I mean, Obi-Wan, too, you know, just in terms of trusting it and not trying to... You know, the whole idea of, like, letting go control so you can fly into the Death Star versus, like...
Let go.
The worst times of my life are when I, like, or the least progress I've ever made or when I was trying to control every factor. When I was, like, trying to, like, well, let me get this locked down. I'll do this the exact right steps you're supposed to do it, you know, versus, like, no, just let go. Just, like, trust yourself, trust your instincts, and it'll be a better product. You'll have a better... run of things, and you'll be happier on the way, you know? But it's that fear. You want to control it. And he's like, no, just use the force, man.
Yeah, I think another big thing would be, and this, I was really lucky. My family was pretty great. And seeing how crappy people's home lives are, we need to end that cycle.
Yeah.
If you really... On an individual level, growing up in a poor family situation, I don't mean poor money, causes more problems in the world than anything.
Yeah.
You know, we've all, whether we've been that person or dated that person, there's times where you go, are you yelling at me or your father? You know what I mean? Like,
right. Yeah.
And so, I think, you know, being able to, we would really prize mental health.
Mm-hmm. It's a family mental health.
Yeah, family mental health. The family, that core should be very important. Mm-hmm. It's weird. I guess that's why I feel liberal and conservative.
Yeah.
Conservatives tend to be better about, you know, the family, right?
Yeah.
And liberals tend to come off as everyone but your family.
Yeah. Well, liberals, ideally, I think we want to move past kind of the old things of our family that have held us back or whatever. You know, maybe old baggage. You know, I think we want to try to process that. But I think you're right, too, that, like, there's a lot to be said for, hey, your family is your family. You know, love them even if you don't agree with them.
Yeah, but I also having both... parents
being
a good family. Also,
it's a good balance.
Also, it's like I kind of wish that we had... I wish there was... I mean, people will always get divorced, but I wish it was a smaller percentage.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I was lucky I didn't have... My parents didn't divorce.
Same here, yeah.
But, man, that must be hell on a kid.
Has to be.
It has to be.
Has to be.
You know? Let's see. Oh, and we would do our best to, in the religion, to anybody that feels like an outcast, trying to be as inclusive as possible.
Super inclusive. And I know earlier we were talking about with, you know, the idea of we should be able to worship anywhere. Would we have a worship space? Would we have any kind of specific meeting place? Or would we have,
my religion is... my religion wouldn't be religion, I guess. It would be whatever you... I don't know. I kind of like people believing anything that they
just
want. And I
doing
wouldn't
their
want
own thing.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to force any ideas on people.
Yeah.
You know? Respect for Mother Earth.
Yeah.
Though, I mean, I don't know if this would be a religion or just...
Well, I guess, like, you know, in the idea of maybe, you know, you want to hear differing opinions. Like, if you were to have a worship service, it would almost kind of probably look like a stand-up show in some ways, just like allowing people to talk and say their opinion on stuff and just like
on
sharing
the same issue,
the mic.
Like, say, if we're talking about selfishness.
Yeah.
You know, I would love to hear people talk about their...
10 different takes on selfishness.
Right? Yes.
Yeah.
To me, it's... that's great because maybe, like, a lot of the Buddhism quotes, you know, I have a little thing, Buddhist quotes or whatever... Mm-hmm. I relate to a lot of that, especially with the mind stuff, more than I do Christianity.
Yeah.
But I still love hearing, you know, stuff Christianity. So imagine having all these different viewpoints on the same thing. Something is eventually going to ring true for you and hit you and be like, oh, I felt that way. How did this person do this? You know, So, but you're never going to be able to include everybody once again. Yeah. And
sure, yeah. But some maybe, I don't know, I'm just... to if you were to have like a central meeting place, just so you could create that community, maybe that sense of that what churches were and can be good for, you know, back it could be, I mean, people meet in houses, you know, people meet in
wherever they want to meet. I think school's a great place to meet. That would be kind of cool to have
the spirit of like learning and growth, and not because a school doesn't say like, oh, this is all the science that we know, so we're done with science, you know. We don't have to learn anything else.
You know what, you brought up your dad, you know, being a pastor.
Yeah.
And if you really kind of look at it, that's the going once a week is so that you continue to learn and grow,
right? Yeah.
So
school, yeah
it's, I mean, in some ways it's kind of learning, growing, being, learning about just so many different things that might be able to help you, you know?
Yeah. And I think, too, I think back to, like, your idea of clearing the mind so that your thoughts are maybe, you have a better relationship with them. It's, like, funny, I don't know if prayer specifically sometimes is, like, more about the injection of certain thoughts and, like, wanting you to think certain thoughts about, for better or for worse. Like, and ideally it'd be, like, positive thinking, but, like, I don't know, that maybe that is where meditation would, or some kind of clearing the mind type moment in your worship service would take place. It's like, let's clear the mind, 10 opinions on selfishness.
Let's take the mushrooms.
And yeah, right.
Remember that none of this matters.
Yeah, totally. Nihilism, baby.
I don't know. Man, it's so weird. Because, dude, I love... Do you remember that the feel-good... I love 80s movies, but I also love the movies from the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
But I love 80s movies for how they made you feel. They made you feel a certain way about family and love and relationships
and
friends. There was something there that was absolutely beautiful. That's how I kind of...
That's what you want to create.
...wish the world was,
yeah.
But it can never be that way. And if it was like that, once again, all the time, you'd be bored, and somebody still wouldn't feel included.
Yeah. We could at least put a cap on some of the selfishness, I think. I think we're a very selfish society compared to where we were in the 70s. And I think maybe that's that sense of fellowship or community is maybe that what those movies kind of brought out. For like some of the cynic looks back at those and be like, "Ah, that was like kind of based on lies. Like that was kind of like a false utopia type deal." And that's there's some truth to that for sure. But I don't know, maybe that's where the community, you can at least, you can help move towards more happiness in your own family and your own communities. You know, we can do that today, you know?
Yeah. I think also having a central place of worship or whatever is going to be tough because people do have access to information, the internet, what's going on.
Yeah.
And their lives there's a lot more going on in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't know, something. I don't know. I think what things make you happy. Whatever.
Yeah.
You know, because isn't that all life is getting rid of all the stuff that's baggage or just has a negative influence on your life so that you can... I love... Maybe there's the moments... My favorite moments of my day is when I'm completely at peace with everything.
Mm-hmm.
I neither need nor want... You know, I'm just comfortable. And I wish we had more moments like that. Because just, like, dude, we're alive.
Yeah.
That is the truth. That's what made mushrooms so crazy is, like, all it is a reflection on how crazy this actually is.
Yeah.
Like, this is life. We're alive. Like, the only thing that you've known, that I've known, is to be alive.
Yep.
That's it.
That's it.
You know? That's the only thing we could even possibly know. Even if we...
Through my specific story.
Yeah.
My specific version, like, my life. That's the only thing I've ever known, too. Yep. Not even just aliveness, but my aliveness.
Yes. Yeah. What's the one thing you always take with you? No matter where you go.
Your mind. Yeah, you. Wherever you go, there you are.
Yeah. And so, first of all, you better get comfortable with that.
Right?
Yeah, I was thinking about that when I was falling asleep. I was like, man, I really want that sense of wanting that inner peace, you know, and working on that is I wanted that because I had that moment. I was like, dude, no matter what, I'm stuck with me.
Yeah. I think, and I think mushrooms definitely helped to get outside of that sense of self. If I had to name anything or maybe give an overarching ethos or title of your religion, it'd be like mushrooms without the mushrooms, you know?
Yeah.
You want to get that feeling again.
Also, that feeling, that open, the clear, it was just clear.
Yeah.
And it was just beautiful. The closest that I've ever, and I would tell anybody to try it, is the sensory deprivation chambers.
Yeah, I love it. I've done it a couple times, yeah. Oh. It's amazing.
The first time, it felt like I was on a trip.
Spaceship, yeah.
Yeah, and then the second time, it was weird because it was more, it felt more as if I was just receiving messages.
Mm.
And what I got from the last time I was in there for 2 hours was fear can only exist. I remember it was spelled out while I'm, and it was like it was being typed out. Fear can only exist if you hold on to the past. Period. Be a child.
Yeah.
Child doesn't have the fear. They don't have the past.
Be a child. Totally.
Be a child. And the fear, right, is the fear that we have. You think about how it manifests itself in such weird ways. So say you're 5 years old and someone steals your... you worked really hard and you bought this one Star Wars figure that you just love, right? And then someone steals it. Later on in life, how does that how does it manifest itself? You never want success and you never want to have money because you're deep down, you're scared that someone taking it away.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's crazy, but that's actually how we're living our lives.
Totally, yeah.
And to get outside of that, to just be, is just beautiful.
Totally, man. I think that's a good place to wrap things up.
But, cool.
yeah. Thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, really, dude. I appreciate it. This was fun.
Great conversation. We've had a lot of these out over the years outside of mics, and it's good to finally get one recorded. Yeah, thanks a lot, man.
Dude, thank you. Look at this. We're shaking hands.
All right, peace, brother.
Thanks.
Well, that's the show, everybody. Thanks again for tuning in. Check out Chris online. Check out this show online, ChooseYourOwnReligion.com. Facebook, Twitter, I'm there. iTunes, Stitcher, I'm there too. Hit me up, joe@joequint.net. If you heard something you want to keep talking to me about, I would love to continue that conversation with you. And send me hats. I want some hats. And Ja Rule.
What's a Creative Podcast Network? Yeah.